Lynch signals 8 p.m. Wednesday, and it's time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, and alongside a team saturated in talent, Greg Audell, Drs. Warren Holloman and Mary Edgerton, media maven and engineer Nicole Rocherlin, and unsurpassed intern who'll be doing all sorts of things tonight, Tatiana Gago, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on journeys through windows of their souls and transport us to magical worlds before returning us safely to the present. You know, last week's narratives about depression captured our compassion, but I'll tell you, drained our tear ducts. So we're going to dip into what I call our spring mix of stories with tellers charged with, well, tickling our spirits and tapping into our hearts. My guests tonight are Dana Foy, Justin Dice, and Lloyd Taylor. Welcome, you guys.
Oh, thank you very much.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks, good to have all of you here. Good to have all of you
thank
here.
You.
Dana, let's start with you. You're married with three adult children. I guess that means over the age of 18?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Okay, good. And a dog named Isabel.
That's correct.
Now, your first storytelling venture was at the Moth in Asheville, North Carolina. Now, what inspired you to go to that North Carolina Moth?
Well, I actually have a son that lives in Nashville, and I had been listening to the Moth radio broadcast for many, many years. I had intended to go to a live event, and when my son said, "Dad, come on, let's go," I jumped at the chance.
Great. So he wanted to go.
Absolutely. And I wanted to, too.
And did you tell a story there?
No, I didn't get picked that night, but I had one ready.
All right. What was the theme that night?
Karma.
How's the crowd in Nashville?
It's not quite as big as Houston, but they have a full house
time.
I'm going to say over 100 or so.
Yeah, it's amazing how full houses are pretty much protocol at the Moth. Now, your first story is entitled The Unwanted Dog. Now, it's about a late furry friend and not about Isabel, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, because I want our listeners to know that hearing the words unwanted dog doesn't mean they ought to go hire an assassin, right? Okay, just want to make sure we know that. Tell us your story.
Folks, I laid down the law at my house, no dogs. At the time, my wife was a full-time graduate school student and holding down a part-time job. And I had one of those jobs that you just worked all the time, and I was doing my best attempt at being Mr. Mom. Up early every morning, getting myself and my three kids out the door, hustling home to get them in, get them fed, get the homework done, get them into bed, and I had all the work that I brought home to finish. But one thing's for sure, I could always count on my father-in-law to do just the opposite of what I asked him to do. He presented my three kids with an 8-pound female miniature schnauzer. All her coat was midnight black, and she had black eyes to match, and somehow the groomer made her eyebrows look just like curly eyelashes. Some folks call that little dog a precious little diva. Well, let me tell you all about Precious, folks. That dog laid awake all night long, every night, trying to dream up a new way to make me madder in hell. Things like knocking over every trash can in the house. And I swear to God, that dog could read. When she got the munchies, she would look high and low for something to chew on. And she came across something that had Walmart on the label, it was just beneath her. She'd stick her nose up in the air and just piss away. But look out, folks. If she came across something that said Louis Vuitton or Michael Kors, it would just be destroyed. Several times, I took that dog on a long walk for the sole purpose of getting her to do her business. And she'd yank as hard as she could on that leash, her nose glued to the ground, her rear end up to the sky, sniffing here, sniffing there, sniffing everywhere, trying to find the perfect spot to mark her little territory, only to return home and let it all go in the house. Ooh, I hated that dog. I hated that dog. So I called a family meeting to talk about the dog, and I just told them the truth. Folks, our dog is incredibly smart. Got a huge, huge need to be the center of attention. And our family, we're just too busy to give her that much attention. She would really be better off in a family, maybe two empty nesters, or a family with older kids that are not busy as we are, and she could be a high priority. They could have her on a regular grooming schedule. They could take her to the dog park where she could be social. And better yet, she could go to all the friendly dog places around town and just have a wonderful time. So for kids, what do you think? Why don't you go talk about this and come back to me and tell me what you think about finding the proper home for this dog? Well, they came back to me, folks, and it was unanimous. I could go if I wanted to, but the dog stays. I didn't let on at the moment, but it did hurt my feelings more than a little bit. So the next day, it's about 5:30 in the evening, and I'm cooking dinner, and I'm frying up a pan full of sausage links, boiling some water, getting ready to make some Kraft macaroni and cheese, and I reach up and I turn on the exhaust fan. And we have one of those cheap exhaust fans that when it's on high, and you're standing near there, that's all you can hear. Well, then out of the corner of my eye, this dog comes bounding into the kitchen. She's jumping around, barking, just being totally obnoxious. And I says, dog, what are you doing in here? You know I don't like you. Can you just go off someplace? So she runs off, but her barks gets louder and louder. And I begin to hear her ear-splitting, high-pitched bark above the sound of the exhaust fan. And she comes charging back in here, and I told her, dog, what in the world are you doing back in here? Can you just go find a busy street to go run around in? But she wouldn't give it up. She started scratching me on the leg. And I said, okay, dog, okay, so you're on to something. So I turned off the stove, turned off the ceiling, the fan. And I said, okay, dog, show me what you got. So we go walking back to the house. She takes me down the hall into the bathroom. And, folks, there he was. It was my boy. Sound asleep in the bathtub. So I looked over at my son, and I looked back at the dog, and I said, okay, lady, I'm going to keep you.
Very good. All right. Now, Tatiana's looking at you, and now she's finally smiling. Now, her look is really the look of disdain. And that's the look you're going to get from everybody. And I want you to hear this, because that's why your story is good. Because obviously that's not how the story ends. The notion is that you start off making it sound like, God, you don't want a dog. And then you realize, you know what? You do want a dog. And clearly you have another one now, so it couldn't have been that painful for you. But you called the dog, dog.
Yes, I did.
It had a name.
Lady.
Okay, it was Lady.
It was.
Okay, Lady and the Tramp, I got you. Okay, very unique. So, you got a dog named Lady, and you kept her because, obviously, she was smarter, wiser, and demonstrated something that you never saw in her before.
Well, and over time, she actually became my dog.
You see, there you go. I love it. I love it. So, Tatiana, chill out a little bit because she's mad at you. Now she likes you. Okay, but the idea is that dogs are important for a lot of obvious reasons. But, you know, the reason I wanted to start off with this story is because tonight we have kind of a mixed bag, although there are some segues that's going to make some good sense. But, you know, dogs are one of those creatures that are so clearly embedded in our memories and in our hearts. They always have been, right? Because there's something about dogs that are honest and authentic. And in my mind, a dog and a story are almost synonymous. There's that level of authenticity that you can't shake. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely.
What do you guys think? Do you think so? You have a dog, Justin?
I used to, though, growing up.
Right. Loved it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Something about a dog, something that's authentic. Lloyd?
Yeah, I actually have a 8-month-old puppy right now, and she's an absolute menace, but I love her to death, though.
Yeah. Sort of like a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
The good thing is that you don't have to worry about college, right? You don't have to worry about getting ready for the SAT. It's really great. But, you know, and I always talk about my own dogs and you know, one Sadie that I talk about all the time. She could just heal anybody with a smile and a touch. She was a dog I used to take to MD Anderson. And they're pretty remarkable. Great story. Now, Dana, everyone has a different reason for telling stories, but I know that for you, it's important for you to relive important life episodes through stories, right?
Oh, that's correct.
Yeah. Tell us what that means.
Well, I've got adult kids who are in their 30s, and most of the stories I tell are happen to me when I'm at the age they are. And I learned a lot, a hard lesson. So if I can tell them a few stories and make them laugh and get their attention, perhaps their learning curve won't be as steep as hard as mine as they get older.
Yeah, very good. I love it. So it's a real, so it's an anecdote for learning in many ways.
Right.
Right. Michigan native Justin Dice, you are an educator. You're a private tutor. You love great writing, good beer, new places, and I think you're a Butler basketball fan, aren't you?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. Did you go to Butler?
I did.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that would make sense then. How'd you feel about them just not, well, never mind, that would be a bad question, right?
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
They're close, yeah, they're close. Well, don't, you know, what about that? You know, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. You never want to ask me about any sports things there, so, you know, especially.
Yeah, sorry about it.
That's really, I'm just like from Loser City. Okay, although that's a terrible thing to say. And like Dana, you tell stories at the Moth. In what subjects do you tutor, first of all?
So I tutor academic subjects, mostly essay writing, and then also test prep. So ACT,
Very
LSAT.
You help college-bound students with their essays, college essays, those sorts of things.
Yep.
Very good. Good for you. You know, I've always liked talking to myself because I never lose an argument. And your first story kind of reinforces that claim, right? And this is one you told at the Moth under the theme tests. So this is a real tutorial for us all. And it's a story that contains every essential ingredient needed to tell a superb narrative. Tell us a story.
Sure. So I was warned when I began teaching about the first test that I would experience as a teacher. My older colleagues told me that at the beginning of the year, there'd be several weeks where my students would behave themselves. But they said not to be fooled. They were really just getting to know me, feeling me out. And then after a few weeks, there'd be one student who'd be the first to push the boundaries, to test me to see what they could get away with in the class. And they said, if you ever want to have any control over your classroom during the entire year, do not fail that test. So, it's about 3 weeks into school, and I'm teaching my first hour senior English class. And Tim walks in. He was about 15 minutes late, and this wasn't unusual for Tim. Tim was the school's star baseball player, and evidently felt like he had the run of the place. In 3 weeks, I think I saw him 3 or 4 times. He was always late. He went to school just enough, I sensed, for his coaches to keep him eligible to play. And it was evident to me that Tim thought that I was privileged to breathe the air that he did. So he walks into class 15 minutes late, tosses his late pass to me, walks to the back of the room, sits next to his friend. I'm in the middle of instruction, and he starts talking loudly, so loudly that the entire class can hear him. And I think, oh, no, you didn't. And I can sense everyone's eyes on me. Everyone gets it. This is the test. So I pause my instruction. I say, excuse me, but Tim, we've covered this. You can't speak while I'm speaking. You just have to wait to talk to your friend, okay? And Tim looks me dead in the eye, looks back at his friend, and keeps talking, the same volume. So I said, all right, this is it. This is when I need to pass my test. So I walk back to the back of the room, and I walk up to his desk. I said, Tim, I'm sorry, that's incredibly rude. You can't just talk over me while I'm talking. That's just not acceptable. We've covered this. And Tim starts to get agitated. And he's a big guy, maybe 6'4", 240. And he starts to raise his voice at me. He says, you got a problem with me? What's wrong with you? You always talking to me. You always have something to say to me. You just get out of my face. Get out of here. Get out of my face. You always talking to me? You always have something to say to me. Go talk to yourself. Don't talk to me. Go talk to yourself. Again, all the eyes on me, and I pause and think, okay, how can I handle this? So I look down at Tim, and I smile politely. I say, okay. Kind of gives me this look. And so I turn. I walk back to the front of the class, and I turn to face them. I turn to my right, and I say, Mr. Dice, what are we going to do about Tim? I turn to my left. Mr. Dice, I don't know. He's been very rude. Exceptionally so. I've been very polite to him. I know. Despite all that he's done. Exactly. I keep thinking of ways to help him. I know. I remember. I was there. And for about a minute, I talked to myself. With myself. But we hadn't covered prepositions yet. So I look up from my dialogue, and Tim is sitting in his seat, wide-eyed, straight as a board, not saying a peep. I didn't have any more problems with Tim that year. He was a model student for me. And the best part of all of this is that this seemed to extend to the rest of my class. The next day, one of my favorite students, Drayon, was in the back of the class, raises his hand with a question, come back to help him. He's answered his question, and I said, does that make sense, Drayon? Do you have any more questions? He said, yeah, I got one. He said, Mr. Dice, you a serial killer. What? Drayon, what are you talking about? Am I a serial killer? He says, well, you're always smiling, and you like classical music. And yesterday when you were talking to Tim, I think your brain broke. I looked at him, and I leaned in a little bit, and I lowered my voice, and I said, Dreon, maybe. And so it was that with the threat of insanity and murder, I passed my first test as
a
teacher.
It. That is great. That is great.
Thank you.
I love it. I love it. I love it. What kind of feedback did you get for that? I mean, obviously people must have been talking about that for a while.
Yeah, that day.
They thought you were like Hannibal Lecter. Is that what they thought at first?
I didn't ask, but I did get that impression.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. People didn't linger in class too much after the bell rung for a little bit.
Right.
And one of my co-teachers came in the room afterwards. She said, what did you say to Dreon? I told her the story, and she goes, good job.
Yeah, I love your preposition line, too. I love
Thank
that.
You. Thank
yeah,
you.
A student once asked me, what's a pronoun? And I said, it's a noun that gets paid to be in a sentence. And he actually believed that. Yes. What? Tatiana's looking at me. You never heard that one? I never used that one in class? No? Do you have any impressions about this story? What do you think?
It reminds me of my old high school, actually. We would have situations exactly like this. Well, not the teacher talking to himself,
yeah,
but
right,
we would have
right.
these types of students.
Well, how would a teacher handle that situation?
Well, not as funny as his.
No,
he wouldn't.
Not
as calm either.
Yeah, I used to do terrible things. Terrible, terrible
used
things
to?
In middle. Thank you, Tatiana. Yeah, thank you. Very good. Yeah, she listens too carefully. I used to do terrible things in middle school. You know, we had this awful substitute. God, he was awful, Mr. Wagner, and he had a hearing aid, and he would ask questions in class, and I'd raise my hand, and he'd say yes, and I'd go. What? And I'd go, and he'd turn up his hearing aid, and then I'd say, well, you know what? And, you know, he'd just have his brains blown out. Yeah, I can see none of you like junior high humor. I did, and I was really good at it. Very good at it. Now, Justin, there's a lot of curious lessons in this yarn. Mm-hmm. What's the important lesson, if there is one, and I think there is, that you mm-hmm. want us to take from the story?
Sure. I mean, I know as a teacher, what I learned from that experience was, one, to always keep your cool. When a student mouthed off or there was a pressure-filled situation. And then secondly, just the value of humor, yeah. diffusing a tense situation.
Yeah, and I think you're actually underestimating it. When I heard your story, The Moth, this is the truth, I thought to myself, this is a great, great manifestation of what Mark Twain always said, which is, show me someone who knows what's funny, and I'll show you someone who knows what isn't. And I think you really handled that well, genuinely.
Thank you.
Now, my former student, who's obviously very brilliant and talented, Lloyd Taylor, a junior majoring in communication, planning a career in broadcasting. He loves theaters and finds storytelling to be a great complement to his drama skills. He lives in the Philippines. He has lived in the Philippines most of his life. And he claims that living in Sugarland for a few years helps to explain why he has no accent. Really, Lloyd, Sugarland helped you reduce an accent?
Well, I mean, I lived in Sugarland from the ages of 3 to 6, and I feel like at that point in your childhood, you're basically like a sponge, and you just soak in everything. So when I moved back to the Philippines, I just kind of, stopped me from gaining the, native dialect and stuff.
But it's the most diverse area on the planet. Nobody speaks English there. How did you,
Well, I guess it's just like me just being thrown into the melting pot is all.
But I guess so.
I'm happy with the accent I have now, though.
Well, you speak well.
Thank you.
You speak very, very well.
Appreciate
My
that.
God, trust me, I teach speech. I know this thing. Okay. Now, I've had several actors on the show, and each argues that storytelling and acting are a lot different. And I'm assuming that you see that as well. And I'm wondering, how do you see them as different?
Well, I think, there is a little bit of overlap between the two, but I think there's way more vulnerability when it comes to storytelling. Since I did take your storytelling class, I feel like in theater, I'm kind of behind a mask of a character, even though I might relate to certain aspects mm-hmm. of that character. Mm-hmm. When I'm telling a story, I'm basically disclosing information about myself,
right.
and it's really introspective, and in a lot of ways, it's cathartic.
Yeah, it's really a very profound point in many ways, because David Rainey, I don't know if any of you know the name, he's a really very popular actor at the Alley, very, very reputable, and I had him on the show a couple of times, and the first time he was on, he was a nervous wreck. I swear he was shaking. He was absolutely shaking, and I asked him, how can you possibly be nervous? You're a brilliant actor. He says, this isn't acting. I got to be me. I'm never me on the stage, ever. I play another role, and I distance myself. Now, I understood what he was talking about, but I didn't think that for many actors it was that defined. But it was for him. Needless to say, he told great stories. They were wonderfully, wonderfully, wonderful stories. But he was really nervous, and I remember seeing that, because he's never nervous when he's on stage. At least he doesn't look it. So I was curious what that difference is. And I think it really is a matter of a persona, right?
Absolutely.
Another person's role and yours and how you distance the two. Now, Lloyd, both of your stories are kind of seasonal in a way, because they deal with graduation time and, you know, kind of the geekiness of the whole high school thing. Graduation, prom, party time makes for a very seasonal piece. And your first story is called A Rush of Blood to the Head, A Geek's Tale, if ever there was one. I remember the movie The Bronx Tale, but I think this is probably a little different. Tell us the story.
Okay. So getting punched in the face made it the best day of my life. It was my junior year of high school when I went to my very first hardcore rock concert. The band was called A Day to Remember, and they're the type of musicians that have really loud music, but even louder fans. And the moment I walked into the arena, I realized that I was out of place. I was welcomed to a canvas of broken beer bottles, tattoos, and the faint smell of weed. And at that moment, I felt that, you know, this wasn't really my crowd. I was a theater geek, you know, I'd be better off staying at home just kind of singing along to Disney tunes. But there was something about the atmosphere. You know, the way that the feedback resonated from the speakers, it just kind of drew me in. And the moment the band started playing, all hell absolutely broke loose. The entire crowd just ran straight towards the front, and they slammed us against the metal barricade, and it was absolutely suffocating. It's no wonder why they call it crowd surfing, because you're literally drowning in a sea of strangers' faces. And at that moment, my first instinct was to get out as soon as possible. So I pushed against the current of people, and it was just an absolute, you know, angry mob at that point, and I found myself in the middle of what they called a wall of death. And for those who are uninformed, a wall of death is one of those things where they get two groups of people from opposite sides of the room, and they have them run straight into each other at full speed. Now, I didn't sign up for this, but they clearly didn't get the memo. And after a few seconds, actually, I found myself with a flurry of fists and sneakers coming straight at me. And at that point, I basically accepted the fact that I was going to die. But for some reason, you know, while I was surrounded by this cacophony of angst and teen spirit, there's a weird kind of false sense of, you know, confidence came over me. You know, I thought to myself, I don't want to die today. I'm 17 years old. My mom will be so pissed. Anyway, so I decided to flail my arms and spin around, and the people that pushed me, I pushed them back. And I pushed some other people, and I pushed more people, and I just kept pushing and pushing. And for some reason, I found out that I was having a really good time. I was enjoying it. I had no idea why, but it was the most fun that I've had in years. And so much fun that I didn't notice when a guy's elbow dug straight into my eye. Now, when you black out, you don't really remember what happened. You just kind of teleport like that. And when I came to, I found myself outside of the pit with blood just dripping from one side of my face. And the first thing I saw were the faces of my friends just frantically just in a panic. And one of my friends kneels down and he says, "Dude, are you okay?" And I look at him, and I turn to the mosh pit, and I smile. And I just smile at this beautiful madness in front of me, and I realize that it's not scary anymore. It's inviting. I was so happy because at that day, I realized that I found the one thing, the one place where I could finally celebrate my youth. And I turned to my friend, and I said, "I'm good." And I stood up, wiped the blood off my face, slapped on a bandage, and I went back in. And I never left. I never left.
All right. Now, tell me something. I love this story. These are really great stories tonight for a lot of very fun and really more in-depth reasons than you might think. But in this case, you talk about celebrating your youth.
Right.
You did not celebrate your youth before this event?
I feel like in a lot of ways, it just wasn't as liberating. You know, mm-hmm. I think for most of my life, I felt like I was just this kind of textbook nerd, and I never really went out and kind of found myself, you know.
Really?
I think music is something that's very important to me, especially, you know, I love punk rock music and pop punk music simply mm-hmm. because I feel like a theme around that genre is just kind of introspection and finding who you are and your place in the world. And it was at that moment where everything just kind of clicked.
A lot of discovery in that.
Absolutely,
episode.
Yeah.
Very good. This is Hank Rubicek, and you are listening to guest storytellers Justin Dice, Dana Foy, and Lloyd Taylor on So What's Your Story, only on KPFT 90.1 Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. Dana, describe yourself in high school. What were you like?
Oh, I was a very awkward, shy guy when I was in high school.
Really?
Same.
Awkward, shy.
Especially when I didn't want to be when a pretty girl walked by.
Mm-hmm. You didn't want to be when you pretty girl walked
by. Oh, no,
by.
No.
You just couldn't get out of that.
I just couldn't break
it. Couldn't get out of that persona. Justin, what about you?
Bit of a band geek. Hung out
really?
With the English teacher a lot. Yeah.
Not a band geek, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. English. You love English. Well,
I
what,
do.
What do you love about literature? I know that's an unbelievably open question.
It is.
I love literature. I'm just curious what you think. See, I find literature mm-hmm. to be just remarkably real, and I mm-hmm. think it's also far more symbolic than people think. What do you love about it?
Yeah, I think it has the capacity to communicate very yeah. big ideas and very important ideas.
You have a favorite novel?
I don't know. That's not sure if I have a favorite. I just reread Life of Pi recently. I really love that one.
Great. Very mm-hmm. good. Yeah, I teach a course occasionally in the summer at UHD. It's a graduate course for speech and English high school teachers. And the last time I taught it, I remember, it was kind of funny, actually. It was I had a gym teacher in there who was wearing a windbreaker and had a whistle on, even though it was 103 degrees. He couldn't get out of that. And I had an English teacher who was really pretty wonderful. But she said, but I asked her, I said, so I understand you're teaching Moby Dick in your curriculum. He says, no, I didn't do that. They wouldn't read it. So I decided to have him read The Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm.
I said, really? What, how do you feel about that? Just kind of making them not read a classic.
I always enjoyed teaching the classics when I was an English teacher. I thought it was one of the great joys was seeing a student who initially wasn't interested in that sort of book become interested in it.
Yeah, I mean, my whole point is that you got to teach the classics. That's why they're classics. The Hunger Games, nothing wrong with it, but it's not Moby Dick. It's not Romeo and Juliet. It's not Of Mice and Men, for God's sakes, right? Mm-hmm. Tatiana, you have an opinion about that?
Well, I've have my moments of geekiness, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, it normally involved a boy.
Really?
Yes.
You're geeky around a boy?
I was trying to impress him with a game called Magic the Gathering.
Uh-huh.
That,
I'm not sure.
It worked.
I'm not sure we want to hear about that.
It kind of worked. I was bad at the game.
Okay. Do you have a favorite novel?
It was called, I forgot what it was
about.
Memorable.
You remember the author? What was it about?
I think it was called
Don't you hate the teacher part of me? Yeah. Okay. We'll come back.
The Kite Runner.
Oh, The Kite Runner. Okay.
That's a good one.
All right.
That
good.
Was
God, you were saved by the proverbial bell. Very good. Love it. All right. Tatiana, have you ever had a geeky moment in high school beyond the one you were talking about?
That would have to be it because
they seem to be around. They seem to really kind of hover around boys, right?
Oh, when you're 17 years old, I think that's something where you're
17 now. No, you're older than that. No, you are. I know.
Well, when you're 17, that's kind of what you like to think about stupidly, really.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a very good description. How about describing Houston's rich storytelling community?
Well, everyone should join our friends at the Moth the second Tuesday of every month. At Warehouse Live. On June 12th, the theme will be endings. They could be happy or sad, so long as your story begins with the end in sight. How is that?
Very good. I like it. I like it.
Also, we want our listeners to stay story addicted to So What's Your Story, and to know that not having a radio is no excuse for missing our program, because you can listen to us stream live on kpft.org and Facebook Live. Don't forget to visit us on our So What's Your Story Facebook page and to share our page with your friends, and we love it if you like us when you leave. Also, one more thing, We're also on YouTube, so enjoy.
Yes, and we also don't want to forget to talk about our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. They meet the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel, located at 1500 Sunset, right across from Rice. And be sure to visit the Guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for all the upcoming events and for all our past So What's Your Story programs, every show since 2008. Listen on the menu under Radio Program. We got a lot of stuff going on here. I think Greg said it best. Greg, you're in there, right?
I am here.
And you know Floyd. That it, this really is a hell of a storytelling town, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I think we've long had a reputation as a town for writers, and maybe that naturally led into us becoming a town of storytellers, yeah. And you've certainly been a big part of that.
I think that's absolutely right. I want to get back to prom for a second, because 'tis a season to be jolly or not. I want to know if everyone remembers with whom they went to prom. Dana?
Stephanie Walling.
And she's right out there. Yay, Stephanie. That's your wife.
37 years.
37 years. Wow. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much.
Dustin? Justin?
Elise.
Elise.
Yes.
Okay.
That's all I...
That, yeah, that's
don't,
all
don't,
you
don't recall the last name.
Okay, Elise. Clearly another memorable person. All right, I gotcha. Tatiana?
With a boy named Carlos.
A boy named Carlos. It almost sounds like a short story. A boy named Carlos.
Came from another school.
Came from another school, yes. I went with Gail Goldstein, and I was also a stutterer in high school. I don't know, Justin, you were at the mall. I remember me telling the story that I stuttered in high school. Now, this is going to be significant, so bear with me. I never said much in class because by the time I'd get it out, it'd be time for summer break or I'd be laughed at. And the person I went with to the prom was just, I mean, she was magnificently beautiful. I don't know what she looks like now, but she was gorgeous, you know, when you're 18 years old. And I took her to the prom and I was so proud. And then I overheard her tell her friends when she was coming out of the restroom, she said, I was stuck going with him to the prom because my boyfriend in dental school couldn't come in. So I turned to her and I said, how are you going to get home tonight? And those are the last words I said to her, you know, stuttering, everybody. No. All right. Mean, wasn't it? Wasn't that mean?
Aww.
What she said? Yeah, of course.
I mean, it was terrible. I just wanted some sympathy. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting it.
Poor Hank.
I'm a little... Thank you.
Sorry.
That's what we're looking for. You're welcome. That's what we're looking for. Now, we're going to continue to roll with prom for a few more minutes with Lloyd's Bouquet of Clumsy Words. See, we're kind of leading up to this. Let's hear it, Lloyd.
All right. So, talking to girls is like solving a Rubik's Cube. I've been trying for years and I still can't figure it out. And even when I think I'm making some progress, I find that I'm just as confused from when I first started. Now, I met the love of my life when I was 16 years old. Her name was April, and she was something else. She was funny and smart and down to earth. She was like one of those beautiful girls in romantic comedies that walk by you in slow motion. Even just a simple, "Hey Lloyd, what's up?" would just have me melt on the floor almost instantly. Safe to say, I was absolutely head over heels for her. And around that time, it was prom season, and I felt this unrelenting urge to ask her out. And I came up with this foolproof plan for her to say yes. I was going to walk up to her doorstep, dressed to the nines, with a box of chocolates in one hand and a broom in the other. And I was going to say, "I'm here to sweep you off your feet." It's corny, I know, but that's how I roll. And now that I had my game plan... I figured that all I had to do was to wait for the right time. So I waited and waited and waited and waited and waited and waited until 2 months had passed and I had made zero progress. And it was the start of spring break. And she told me that she was going to be gone for the entire week to fly off to California to see her family. And at that point, I said to myself, well, game over. I'm done for. Imagine all the hot surfer dudes she's going to meet when she's in California. Like, I'm going to be old news by the time she comes back. And so I decided to give up. Until later that night, we ended up in the same bar. She was outside in the balcony talking to her friends, and I was inside playing beer pong, kind of drinking my feelings away. And one of our classmates, someone I never talked to, walks up to me, and he says, "Hey, Lloyd, are you going to ask April to prom?" Yeah. How do you know that? "Oh, well, you know, we were just talking out in the balcony, and she says she thinks you're going to ask her out to prom, so are you going to do it?" I guess so. You know, I was freaking out. Like, I had kept this a secret for months, and she had known this whole time, and I just couldn't believe it. Like, I was thinking to myself, like, "Oh my God, she knows. Wait. She knows. She knows. That means she's expecting it. That means she wants it to happen. We're both here. I have to do it. You know, the stars have aligned. You know, it's showtime." And before I get off my stool and walk to the balcony, I realize that I'm missing the most important thing. You know, I'm missing the broom. I can't ask her out without the broom. I need the broom. It doesn't matter. I just need it. So I bolt out of the bar and I run to every single convenience store within a 5-mile radius. And with no luck, they have mops, they have brushes, but they don't have brooms. I can't sweep a girl off her feet with a mop. It's not nearly as romantic. And so I end up running around for an entire hour until I realize it's midnight. And I walk back to the bar empty-handed. And I just think to myself, like, well, you know what? Maybe this is just a sign. This is just destiny or fate telling me that it's not supposed to happen. So I head back to my bar stool. I sit down. I just look at the bottom of a plastic cup, all dejected. And a few minutes later, April walks up to me and she gives me a hug and she says, "Well, I guess I'll see you later." And she walks past me. And I just sit there watching the girl of my dreams walk away. And I think to myself, like, what the hell am I doing? You're like, what am I doing? Like, am I going to let this happen? Like, no, I can't just quit. Not for a girl like that. I have to tell her. There's something, like, somewhere in the middle of my chest that tells me I have to tell her no matter what. So for one last time, I run out of the bar and I stop her by a streetlight and I grab her by the hand. And at that moment, it was like my emotions just spilled onto the concrete. I told her how much I liked her smile, how much making her laugh was the most rewarding thing for me, and how she was one of the most genuine and real people I ever met in my life. You know, I told her anything and everything that came to mind. It was just this drunken disaster piece of a confession. And it worked. She said yes. She said yes, and I just stood there in utter disbelief. And, you know, to this day, I still don't know how to solve a Rubik's Cube. Maybe one side, if I'm lucky. But even if I have no idea what I'm doing, I might as well try. Because anything, quite literally anything, is better than not showing up at all.
Good job. All right. The mop, huh? And the mop wouldn't work. I'm going to mop up the tears if you hurt me.
Yeah, that's probably what I would have used the mop for.
Yeah, that's probably right. Yeah. Right. Do you have any antidepressants? No, why? Because I'll be so bummed if you don't go out with me. Right, pretty corny stuff. Yes. You guys have any corny phrases that you ever used? It's impossible not to.
I was too awkward and shy.
You were too awkward and shy.
I feel like everything I said has just been awkward.
Right. Justin's thinking about it. You're thinking about it, right?
I'm not sure. I don't recall anything specifically. I may have blocked it out.
That's all right. That's okay. We'll get back to it. Now, Dana, Tatiana referred to the theme endings a little while ago, the moth. And the next moth and your next story looks like a conspicuous candidate, the ending that didn't. As a compass, tell us what you were doing for a living in this story.
Oh, I was a construction supervisor for a local home building company. My primary role was to get the houses built. Mm-hmm. My secondary role was to do the warranty work on the homes that had been sold.
And that's going to be significant. We're looking forward to it. Tell us the story.
I was told to make that man happy and keep him happy. That man had just purchased a home that I helped build. But unfortunately for him, he bought it from an unscrupulous salesperson who made unauthorized promises of what the builder would do after he moved in. The builder and I didn't become aware of that until we got a nasty, nasty letter from his lawyer. And by that time, the salesman had cashed his commission check and skipped town. A negotiation took place between the builder and the lawyer, And the results were the homeowner really liked the house and he stayed in it. And it was up to me to figure out how to make him happy and keep him happy. So the Warren Department allowed new homeowners 365 days to submit in writing any issues they had with their homes. And I was the warranty department, folks. They came to me. And I had a bad feeling about my new homeowner. I assumed he was going to be mad at me for a year, and he was going to be all over me every day, upset about burnout light bulbs, maybe weeds in the yard. And I got really concerned about how my next year was going to go. So I walked over to my desk, opened up my calendar, and flipped it forward 365 days and put a smiley face on the day his warranty expired. And to make myself feel better, I just decided whenever I thought of him in my mind, I was going to call him Mr. Happy. Well, it turns out I was all wrong about my new friend. He was a sweet and friendly guy. There was nothing wrong with his house, but he sent his first letter in, really just wanted me to come in and touch up the paint and the scuffs on the walls that he made when he moved his furniture in. Oh, that was against all the rules. But his was a special circumstance. I thought it was the right thing to do, and it didn't cost much. So I just did it. And I did it for him several more times, knowing full well that I was likely setting a trap for myself. And if the other homeowners found out I broke the rules for him, they would want the same for them. Well, I wasn't afraid. I just assumed maybe a few people would do that to me. Oh, I was wrong. It was a ton. It took me 3 months of working overtime to clean up that to-do list. Never been so tired in all my life. And when I finally got finished, I took a deep breath, thinking my life would be normal again, and then I got the call. The vice president of construction was coming to see me. Oh, I was so afraid. I was certain he was going to come fire me for breaking all the rules and spending all that money trying to keep people happy. I was wrong. He told me he was proud of me. No one had received as many thank you notes from homeowners for me keeping them so happy. But what he was most impressed about was how I was able to get all that warranty work done while still keeping the construction schedule on time. And he was looking for some help. Another project about 10 miles away was complete. He was going to move his construction staff across town, and he needed someone to be responsible for the warranty work over there. And he said, "Dana, son, you are as dependable as the sun rising in the east and setting in the west. If you'll do this for me, I know I can trust you to do a super job in both neighborhoods. Will you do this for me?" Well, folks, I knew I was in a trap of my own making. If I told this guy no, I would never see another pay raise or promotion. And if I said yes, well, I was saying I would do a whole lot more work for the same amount of money. I said yes. I had a family. So I worked really, really hard. And, you know, when you work hard, time passes by quickly. And before I knew it, I turned my calendar over, and there was that smiley face announcing the end of Mr. Happy's warranty. It was a Saturday morning. I took my crew. We knocked on the door. We went in, and we did everything on his list and a few more for old time's sake. As I was running out the door to get away, Mr. Happy grabbed me and gave me a big hug. I finally got out the door. I shut the door, and I was just so filled with emotion, many, many emotions. The greatest was the joy that the toughest year of my young work life was behind me. And going forward, I was going to make it better. I was going to follow all the rules. No more trap setting. I would never be afraid to go to work again. I'm going to celebrate by taking the rest of the day off. But before I can disappear, I have to go by the sales office and make sure they don't need me for something. So I stick my head in the door. Oh, my God, folks. Mr. Happy was there. I thought, this is nuts. No way could he beat me here. He would have had to pass me on the road, and nobody passed me. So I walked over to him. I said, "Wasn't I just at your house? How in the world did you beat me here?" Well, this gentleman stepped back and looked at me like me crazy. He says, "Oh, I know what's going on. That was my brother. We are identical twins. And you, sir, you must be Dana." And I said, "Yeah, how do you know you found me?" "Oh, my brother loves you. He's got a big man crush on you. Every time I come to town, all he does is talk about you, Dana. He thinks you're great. And, Dana, I got to tell you, just because of you, I just signed some paperwork. I just bought a new house in this neighborhood."
Wow. Very good. Now, this is an important story because I want our listeners to know exactly what your job was to capture the meaning of the moment. Pride, honesty, integrity all come to mind. A lot of lessons, but what's the most important lesson that we should take from this story?
Well, in that year, I tried really, really hard to control my schedule, to make things go my way. But what I found out was, no matter how hard I tried, life is going to show up in ways that I never, ever expected. Right. And as long as I kept doing what I thought the next right thing was, even though I had to keep working, it pretty much worked my way.
Well, doing the right thing is an adage. It's a cliche that I think all of us use. But, you know, doing the right thing is a hard thing to do. But you did. You did. You did the right thing. And I always respect that. Our spring mix, only on So What's Your Story, on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. Pacifica Radio, fueled for peace. Next week, Mary Edgerton will have Dr. Valencia Thomas from MD Anderson. She's Mary dermatologist. So Dr. Edgerton will give a whole new meaning to the greeting, "Give me some skin," next week on So What's Your Story. Some of you are laughing. You can laugh out loud. It's okay. Yeah, my wife said nobody's going to get it. Well, you guys did. If no one else does, who really cares? After all, no one's listening other than us, right? We have three people: my wife, my mother, and my dog. And so who cares, right? Okay, good. Now, Justin, your next story is both profound and poignant. We're just going to leave it at that. But it's a pretty powerful tale. Tell us the story.
So the dirtiest I ever felt was kneeling in a gutter on the north side of Indianapolis at 2:30 in the morning, an October evening of 2012, holding a grimy, filthy, smelly sock. But it wasn't because of the sock. That year I graduated college. I had joined to Teach for America. It was my first year teaching at teaching English at high school in downtown Indianapolis. I was stressed out of my mind. I was exhausted. I was trying my best, but I didn't feel like I was helping my students enough. That day, I was at work until 2 a.m. grading midterms. I realized I had to get home. I had to get some sleep. So I would just come back early in the morning to finish up. So I pull out of the driveway of the school, pull out the parking lot. I turn right onto Meridian, and I have to swerve because I notice there's something lying in the road. So I pull off onto the side of the street. I look back, and there's a woman who's pulled off right in front of me. And she's running past my open window on her cell phone saying, "Quick, we need an ambulance. There's a man lying in the road." So I pull off into the Wendy's parking lot right there. I get out of my car. I sprint after her. I get on the scene. She's there doing CPR. Another guy is holding this man's head. Someone else is dialing 911. I think, okay, you know, what can I do? How can I help? I don't want to get in the way, but I want to do something. And it hits me. Kneel, lay your hands on this man, and pray. And I look down, and this gentleman is in his mid-50s. He's dressed very shabbily. He's unshaven. I notice there's a kind of a ratty old backpack that's flown several yards down the street. There's a little pill bottle that's broken up, and there's white pills scattered all over the pavement. I've seen he's kicked off his shoe. He's lost a shoe in the collision, and his sock underneath looks caked in grime. And so instead of kneeling, I simply clasp my hands, bow my head, and begin to pray. And as soon as I do, the voice again says, "No, Justin, kneel, lay your hand on him, and pray." And so I kneel, but now I can smell him. It's like being hit in the nose with an acrid punch. And so instead, I clasp my hands, and I continue praying. And then the third time, more urgently, "No, lay your hand on him and pray." And so I finally relent. I open my eyes. I reach out and I grab his ankle and I begin to pray. At this point, the paramedics arrive and they take over the compressions. They're bagging him. And after a few minutes, they tell me I have to step back because they're about to use the paddles. They rip open his shirt and they shock him once, twice, three times, and they call it. They lay a sheet over his face. And a police officer approaches me. He asks me what happened. He thanks me for helping, and he says, "You know, you should go now. This is now a murder scene." So I walk back to the Wendy's parking lot, and I get in my car. And I'm about to put the key in the ignition when I just start shaking so violently that I can't. I was just standing over a man as he died. And it came to me, the most helpful, the most meaningful, the most loving thing I could possibly do in that moment. And I hesitated. I was praying to a God who came and died for me, and yet I wasn't willing to get my hands dirty for him. So I started up my car finally. I drove home. I realized there was no way I was going to sleep that night, so I emailed my principal. I drove back to school to prep for the superintendent they were going to order me that day. I'm working for a couple hours when my friend and co-teacher Ken walks in the room. He sees me there in the same clothes that I had been wearing the day previously, and he asked me what happened. I told him the same story I've just told you, and he says, "Justin, don't be so hard on yourself. It was a traumatic experience. You were in shock. Anyone would have responded that way." I thank him, but I don't quite believe him. Ken sits down, and we both get to work, and about a half an hour passes before we hear this loud clanging upstairs. It sounds like a table's flipped over or a chair has fallen off a desk. We're both startled. We look up, we lock eyes, and Ken blurts out, "Who died?" And immediately goes white with the horror of what he's just said. And he starts to blurt out an apology. He's like, "Justin, I'm so sorry. I didn't even think. I didn't." And I just started cracking up. And it felt like, whoosh, all the emotions of the night just washed out my shoulders. And Ken starts laughing. And I'm laughing so hard I almost fall out of my chair. We finally gather ourselves and we talk some more. We pray together. And Ken extends me the grace that I wasn't willing to extend myself in that moment. It wasn't until about 2 weeks later that I felt myself kind of return to normal. I was driving past the bus stop where this happened, and there was a woman there waiting for the bus. And I saw her, and it kind of dawned on me that she's there, and she's going somewhere else, and I'm here, and I'm going somewhere else, and we're both moving on with our lives. Today, I strive to be less hesitant to jump in and help someone if they need help, to get my hands dirty, either literally or figuratively. But when I do fail to know to do what I know I should, I now know to find a good friend with whom I can laugh, with whom I can pray, and who can clean me up just a little bit. Thank
man,
you.
Man, man. Very powerful. Very, thank you. You have impressions of that story?
Oh, yeah. Very, very powerful story.
Yeah. Lloyd, what do you think?
I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, really compelling.
Yeah. Tatiana, you seem pretty amazed by it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've made a promise to myself that if I ever see someone in need, I would want to do what I can for them, mm-hmm. big or small.
How do you guys document your stories? Dana, let's start with you. How do you document the stories that you want to tell?
Oh, I get a theme, and then I just start writing.
Okay. I mean, you keep a journal? Do you?
I've got a desktop.
Okay. All right. Okay. Justin, what about you?
I think they're all just kind of bouncing up around in my head somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Where we're from, Michigan, are you from?
Grand Rapids.
Okay. And how long have you been here?
Been in Houston about a year and a half.
Okay. So. Job brought you here? Or
yeah.
Yeah.
After
tutorial?
Finished up Teach for America, came down.
You guys want to talk about what you do? If it's of any help at all, tell us about your tutorial service. Tell us where we can get a hold of you.
Sure, yeah. So I work at Advantage Testing, which mm-hmm. is a company. We have offices in the Galleria. Mm-hmm. And I work one-on-one with students on test prep, ACT, SAT, LSAT.
Okay, very good. And we've got your name on Facebook and the like, so D-I-C-E, mm-hmm. people who look you up. And okay, very good. You want to tell us?
Well, our family business is a commercial interior design firm, and we've been in business since 2008.
Mm-hmm. Tell us how we get a hold of you.
Oh, 713-516-1541 is my phone number.
We'll get that on our Facebook. But is there something you want to tell us about where we can reach you online? Or?
Well, at the moment, we don't have a website.
Okay,
all our work has come to us, so if you can just give me a call or get on the web, I'll be ready to go.
Lloyd, something you want to sell?
I feel like I'd only
have... As long as we don't get prices, we're good.
I feel like I'd only be selling like my social media, and I'd rather not do that.
Okay,
like, I feel like I don't want people to like follow me on Instagram or anything like
that.
I'm good. I'm just really happy to be here, and I really enjoyed my time here. That's all I got to say about that.
This is you guys having a good time? Yes?
Absolutely.
Yeah, a little better than you thought. Okay, loaded question, but... Who were the storytellers in your lives growing up? Dana, let's start with you. Who was the storyteller in your life?
Jimmy Dean.
Jimmy Dean?
Yes.
Okay. So not a family member or something.
No.
Jimmy Dean.
But people didn't tell me any stories when I was growing up.
Yeah. Well, why Jimmy Dean? What was so special about him?
Well, my father watched country music every Saturday night when I was a kid, and I watched it with him, and Jimmy would tell stories, and I liked the way he sang, so I just kind of gravitated to him.
Lloyd, have you got a storyteller you're thinking about growing up? Do you have a model or a idol or anything like that?
Well, growing up, I watched a lot of late night television. I think Conan O'Brien was someone that I really looked up to. I also liked
Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay. I think that just shows my millennial
side. I'm thinking Rod Serling, and you're thinking, okay, go ahead.
Well, I know of Johnny Carson, so what it's worth.
Yeah, he was even after Rod Serling, but that's okay. Go ahead.
I was a huge fan of the show Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Good.
The improv show.
All right.
So people like Colin Mochrie.
Okay.
Definitely. And just like a vast array of comedians. But that's like the background.
Cool.
I just love listening to them talk on.
Love it. Justin, who was a storyteller in your life growing up?
I think not anyone in particular, my family, but my whole family, we enjoy telling stories and specifically just from our past, reliving kind of funny or crazy moments from our time together.
How do you document your stories?
I think I have a list somewhere, but I think most of them I just kind of keep up in my head and rehearse to my plants.
Yeah. Lloyd, what do you do?
Yeah, I don't have a physical piece of paper where I write down it, but I think about stuff that's defined me as a person and I can trace it back to a particular story.
You know, we have so many people who listen in who want to, whether they want to listen to good stories, they want to be entertained essentially, but they also want to kind of cultivate their own skill set. What kind of advice would you give someone who questioned their own ability to tell stories? You know, I've always talked about the fact that people are natural storytellers because I think we're all born as a blank page. And I think that every episode that we experience really is a story. If there's a piece of advice that you could give anyone who says, gee, I'm not really a storyteller, but I'd like to be, what would you tell that person?
I feel I think you hit the nail on the head. It's just storytelling is something that's really innate. And just the fact that you exist is something.
Right.
And with a good skill set, you can make any story compelling. And I think there's a perfect example of that today.
Yeah. That's something?
Just think if you have a story in your mind, you just write it down.
Okay.
Say it aloud and practice. And
there you go.
Anybody can do it.
There you go. Justin, what do you think?
I think finding a conflict in any story or memory that you have and using that as a building block.
Okay. Using the conflict, kind of thinking with that first. Mm-hmm. Very good. Very, very good. Thank you, Lloyd Taylor, Justin Dice, Dana Foy, for revealing how effortlessly personal narratives engage us and transforms us. Each of you validated what has long been believed by writer Vera Nazarian. The world is shaped by two things, stories told and the memories they leave behind. Stay exactly where you are because the Vinyl Avenger and Wild Bill are up next with cool classics for the cooler you. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turn it in for the night or just chilling. Join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story and Treasure What You Hear. You keep loving great stories, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. This is Dr. Hank, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace. Thank you.
Thousands of you have heeded the call, but there's always room for more. You can find KPFT on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. From our latest updates to funny videos, contests, news, and more, you can find us anytime, day or night. We're at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We'd love to give you the latest. Plus, you're already on Facebook. Why not get behind the scenes of Houston's leader for independent music, arts, ideas, and culture right now? Again, find us at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. See you there.
Get even more from your KPFT listening experience by checking out our HD2 stream. New and improved. Get acquainted with our revamped weekly schedule now at kpft.org. Fear not, nationally syndicated favorites like Democracy Now!, Ralph Nader Radio Hour, Letters in Politics, and Economic Update remain. And good news, our evening schedule now features more local shows, including a stellar mix of public affairs, music, comedy, and Spanish language programming created